if we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Alrighty then, welcome indeed. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and we're underway on this Thursday morning. It is the 25th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord 2024, and we've got a nice show lined up for you. We're going to talk to the boss of the Senate in the state of Ohio in just a bit. Senate President Matt Huffman will join us at 9:35 to talk about a whole host of things, including how and why he's being targeted now by the media for quote-unquote dark money acceptance from places like First Energy. They have essentially just kind of erased, have the media, in particular Cleveland.com, they have erased all pretense of objectivity in their targeting of Republicans now. They're going after every single one of them. They know that Matt Huffman is not only the Senate president, but when he gets into the House after November, he's going to run for Speaker. He's probably going to win and replace Jason Stevens, and so they have to go after him now. We're going to talk to him about that and a host of other issues involving the state. That's at 9:35. At 10:10 this morning, we are going to be talking with Stephen Levine. He is an expert on gender and sex identity in schools, and we're going to talk to him about what continues to go on in our schools, not just what is allowed to go on in our schools, but more specifically, what is intentionally being driven in our schools. And I've got a few stories, by the way, today on that subject, one of which will be, maybe two of which will be in the top 9 and 9. So we'll talk to him at 10:10 this morning. And then at 11:10, you know him as Bo Duke. He's just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. He's also a freaking rock or a country star. He's a country star. John Schneider is going to be playing in Lorraine next month at the Lorraine Palace Civic Center. I didn't know this until I interviewed him for my TV show for Strictly Speaking a couple of days ago. John Schneider has had not only 20 albums that he has put out, he has 5 number one hits on the Billboard country music charts. I had no idea. I don't listen to country a lot. I like a little bit of it. Did not know that, and I think it's amazing. And I listened to his most recent song, by the way, which is he calls it a love letter to America. And I agree with it. And it is incredible. He's incredible. So John Schneider is going to join us to talk about his whole album that he's putting out, by the way, is a patriotic-themed album, which is just, again, kind of a reaffirmation of his support for this country, for this republic, for the people, against an ever-overreaching government that is bordering on tyranny. I had a great interview with him. We went like about an hour and 15 minutes in our interview that we recorded a couple of days ago. We'll have John's interview live on, not live, obviously it's recorded, but it'll be dropping on Strictly Speaking on all of our fast channels and at watchtrueblue.com. That'll be in about a week or so. But anyway, we're going to have him live on the air this morning at 11:10. I'm looking forward to that. So we have a lot of people to talk to. And of course, most importantly, I would like to talk with you at 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Either one of those numbers will bring you to me, and we will chat it up together. Before we start with the top 9 at 9, let's do our Pledge of Allegiance. If you are a patriot, stand up proudly and face the flag that you have nearby you. And if you don't have one yet, you know what I was just thinking, by the way, because I'm always thinking about this. I don't know why. It's really weird. I'm really inspired by the people who tell me the way they go out of their way to put flags up in their, you know, nearby where they're going to be in the morning, a little after 9 o'clock, so that they can pledge with us. Whether it be in their cars or in their offices, their cubicles, their houses, their kitchens, their front yards, doesn't matter. But I was thinking about it. I don't know too many people who don't have smartphones anymore. I mean, it is just, it's as common as carrying a wallet, as carrying your smartphone. You know, you can always pull up and save a picture of the United States flag on your smartphone. Just save it in your photos. And then when we get ready to do the pledge, open your phone, tap your pictures, tap your flag, and there it is. There's your image of the flag that you can pledge. I don't know why. I just thought of it a little bit earlier this morning as we were preparing today's show. But that's a good way to do it. If you, by the way, are a repugnant, disgusting, progressive Democrat aimed on destroying everything that this republic stands for, don't download that flag. Don't save that picture. Don't even pretend. In fact, help identify yourself as the Marxist scumbag you are by taking a knee. While the rest of us stand and say,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, it's 12 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and as I say, if there's a 9 in the time, then we can say this.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
All right, let's dive into this. There is a lot this morning.
Number 1.
The Supreme Court is going to hear arguments this morning around 10 o'clock on whether former President Donald J. Trump is immune from prosecution and Special Counsel Jack Smith's ridiculous election interference case. The High Court agreed it would review whether Trump, the Republican nominee, has immunity from prosecution. Arguments at the Supreme Court are expected at 10, but he will not be there, of course, because he's got to deal with the other nonsense in New York. A ruling from the Supreme Court on the issue of immunity is expected by late June. The criminal trial stemming from Smith's investigation has been put on hold pending a resolution to this matter. President Trump and his team, in requesting the Supreme Court review the issue of presidential immunity, said this, quote, if the prosecution of a president is upheld, such prosecutions will recur and become increasingly common, ushering in destructive cycles of recrimination, end quote. Also, criminal prosecution, with its greater stigma and more severe penalties, imposes a far greater personal vulnerability on the president than any civil penalty could. Trump's lawyers wrote this, the threat of future criminal prosecutions by a politically opposed administration will overshadow every future president's official acts, especially the most politically controversial decisions, end quote. Meanwhile, Trump's former Attorney General Bill Barr, who says he will vote for and support President Trump despite their differences, says the hush money case that has him tied to the New York courtroom while all of this is going on is horrendous.
I think this case is a stain on the criminal justice process. This is a case, clearly, of going after the man, not a crime. Mm-hmm. There is no crime here. There's no crime. Hush money is not a crime. Trying to protect your reputation is not a crime. About entering into a non-disclosure agreement is not a crime, even if you're running for office. Mm-hmm. There is no crime here.
There is no crime here, says the former attorney general. He, of course, is correct.
Number 2.
Biden had another burgundy moment, appearing to read off of the instructions from his teleprompter rather than just following the instructions. He was speaking at the North America's Building Trade Union National Legislative Conference in D.C. yesterday when he asked his audience to imagine what could be possible with another term in the White House. He was then supposed to pause to allow them to respond. He doesn't understand these things.
Imagine what we can do next. 4 more years. Pause.
4 more years. 4 more years. 4 more years.
His staff was already there amping up the crowd. As soon as he said 4 more years, if he just would pause, they would pick it up and chant 4 more years. But he actually said it out loud.
What we can do next. 4 more years. Pause.
4 more years. 4 more years.
It was not his first Ron Burgundy moment, of course. You remember in July of 2022, he read another teleprompter instruction as if it was part of his speech.
It is noteworthy that the percentage of women who registered to vote and cast a ballot is consistently higher than the percentage of the men who do so. End of quote. Repeat the line. Women are not without electoral and or political or.
He was instructed to repeat the line. Instead, he said, repeat the line. I'm going to say this again. Biden will be 86 at the end of a second term. He cannot walk nor talk competently at the age of 81. Seriously, if any other family repeatedly shoved an 81-year-old dementia patient in front of cameras to make a public spectacle of himself, to humiliate himself, they would be charged with elder abuse. The Democrats call it campaigning for president.
Number three.
The practice of pushing kids into libraries and schools to watch drag queens read to them, not to overstate it, is abhorrent and abusive to children. The men whose fetish it is to dress up as women and then prey upon young kids are matched in their degeneracy only by the parents who would actually take their kids to this brainwashing. Well, this week in Connecticut, drag queen story time and the perversion and destruction of young kids' minds reached a new low.
Today what we're going to do is we're going to shout... Can I hear that?
Green Palestine!
If you're a drag queen and you know it, shout
Green Palestine!
If you're a drag queen and you know it and you really want to show it, you're a drag queen and you know it, shout
Green Palestine!
In case you couldn't hear clearly, the freak show standing up at that stage, it was only caught on a cell phone camera. That freak stood up there in his female attire, telling a bunch of little kids that if you're a drag queen and you know it, shout Free Palestine. And a bunch of little indoctrinated, warped minds reflexively shouted Free Palestine. They have no earthly idea that what they're shouting is a call for the extermination of Jewish people, but their parents do. Their parents know. The drag queens know. And they're doing it anyway.
Number four.
Biden's pro-migration border chief is opening new processing centers for Muslim migrants. This is amid the pro-Hamas riots that continue to go on in U.S. cities and in U.S. campuses, just after Congress granted $3.5 billion more dollars for migration with the $95 billion Ukraine aid package. Not only did the foreign aid package do nothing to secure our own border, it included $3.5 billion to supercharge mass migration to the U.S. from the Middle East. That was a tweet from Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri. $3.5 billion to speed up more mass migration to the U.S. from the Middle East. This as Middle Eastern either students who are here on visas as well as anti-American Americans continue to chant for the death of Israel and the death of Jews. The inflow of Muslim migrants climbed rapidly under Obama. That inflow has helped to radicalize the Democrats and impose chaotic diversity on many communities, including elite universities in Michigan. Meanwhile, Rhino Mitch McConnell was asked, speaking of that $95 billion, $61 billion of which goes to Ukraine, he was asked whether or not that $61 billion would be enough to win the war. Here's what he said.
Well, we hope so. It's actually only 0.2% of our gross domestic product. So put in that context, it's not a whole lot of money.
You hear the same thing I just heard? $61 billion of your dollars that you don't have, and neither do I, because we're $34.5 trillion in debt. Money's being borrowed from China. He said $61 billion isn't really very much money. You know what that indicates, right? In 3-4 months, they will be coming back to us again for the next outlay. as the grifter, corrupt Volodymyr Zelensky and his corrupt Ukrainian government continues to fleece the United States of America under the pretense that we are somehow some kind of allies. We do not back corrupt governments. We do back innocent people. I back the Ukrainian people. I back those people who are victims of corruption. But I certainly don't want to back it with money that we don't have.
Number five.
Arizona prosecutors unveiled charges against 18 people this week for their alleged roles in trying to subvert the results of the 2020 presidential election. You know, the one that was stolen? The Washington Post reported that among the indicted are former Trump White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, attorneys Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, John Eastman, and Christina Bob. The defendants are charged with a range of felony crimes, including conspiracy, fraudulent schemes and artifices, fraudulent schemes and practices, and forgery. The Attorney General in Arizona, Chris Mays, said in a video statement that the election in that state was free and fair, and that the people of Arizona elected President Biden. Unwilling to accept this fact, the defendants charged by the state grand jury allegedly schemed to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency. After the general election on November 3rd of 2020, the defendants and other unindicted co-conspirators raised false claims of widespread voter fraud in Arizona to pressure elections officials to, I can't believe I have to read these words, to change the outcome of a transparent, free, and fair Democratic election. Let me stop there and just say there was nothing free nor fair about the election in Arizona. It was an absolute travesty. I know it. They know it. And so do the lawyers that they are now going to try to lock up in prison for it.
Number six.
Former NFL player and former USC star Reggie Bush got his Heisman Trophy back yesterday following, quote, fundamental changes in college athletics after he forfeited his trophy 14 years ago due to NCAA sanctions at the time for being a crook. Well, not just him, his family, they're crooks too. And not just them, but USC and the boosters who paid them, they're crooks too. But apparently now, since it's not criminal to take that money and to give that money, now we're going to go back and undo the crime. Yesterday, the Heisman Trust officially reinstated the former USC star's 2005 Heisman Trophy, along with sending a replica of it to USC. In 2005, Bush gained more than 2,000 yards from scrimmage and scored 18 touchdowns. He won the Heisman Trophy, had the fifth most first-place votes in Heisman Trophy history, while leading USC to a national title game. Welcome back to the Heisman family, Reggie, said the Heisman Trust. Well, here's the statistic the story left out. Bush and his family accepted financial benefits of more than $100,000 from marketing agents while at USC, and his parents got a house. His parents got a free house. That was illegal then, and now because NIL says you can pay kids, suddenly it is no longer illegal to do what was illegal at the time, and they gave. This is the destruction of integrity, and quite frankly, of the criminal justice system, because this is civil, but this is in the criminal justice system as well. No one is held to account for their crimes anymore, as long as everybody feels better about it. That is an absolute travesty.
Number seven.
Biden enraged the Catholic Church with his latest show of approval for abortion on Tuesday in Florida, where he blasted the state's impending six-week abortion ban. Biden blessed himself with the sign of the cross when a woman introducing him referenced Florida's abortion law. This is vile, said Catholic Vote. Biden makes the sign of the cross at an abortion rally in Florida. You cannot be Catholic and support abortion. You cannot invoke God and promote death. That was a tweet from Catholic Vote.
Number eight.
The Republican-led Tennessee State Senate failed to pass a bill that would ban the display of ideological and political flags in schools, including pride flags. Republican State Representative Gino Bolso introduced a companion bill in the House after parents expressed concern about the LGBT pride flags being displayed in classrooms. A previous version of the bill allowed for the schools to display only the American flag, the Tennessee state flag, a POW/MIA flag, and flags such as those that represent Indian tribes, cities, counties, and metropolitan governments, as well as an official school flag. But an amendment by Republican State Representative Todd Gardenhire was passed by the state Senate on Tuesday, prohibiting the flying of any flags other than the American flag and the state flag. So ultimately, the bill's passage was blocked by five Democrats and one Republican. So yes, the rainbow will be a-flying in schools in Tennessee.
Number nine.
Finally, more than four, this is bizarre, more than 400 current and former Olympic and professional and collegiate athletes signed a letter that they sent to the NCAA urging them not to ban transgender athletes from women's sports. Separate letters from over 300 academics and about 100 advocacy groups were also sent to the NCAA. Included among the signatories were far left-wing lesbian activists Megan Rapinoe and Sue Bird. The issue of transgender athletes, of course, concerns the safety of the women and the opportunities that they were supposed to get by granted to them by Title IX. Safety because of the physical dominance and size and strength of men playing against women is why women's sports exist in the first place. But nonetheless, according to the letter to the NCAA, quote, to deny transgender athletes the fundamental right to be who they are, to access the sport they love, and to receive the proven mental and physical health benefits of sport goes against the very principles of the NCAA's constitution. If I had a copy of that letter, I would run it through a shredder. And then I would pick up that shredder and run it through a larger shredder. Then I would take that larger shredder and take it to a waste facility and have it smashed into a cube about the size of a Rubik's Cube. But that's just me.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420. The answer.
There you go. That's what's going on. That's what we're going to talk about. Coming up in a few, right after the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to Ohio State Senate President Matt Huffman. Stay here on AM 1420.
Answer.
Always be awake. Always. But never be woke. Good morning. Thanks again for being with us on AM 1420, The Answer. So they're coming for Matt Huffman, the Senate president now. They being the radical left, the left in the media, the plain dealer has decided we're going to target Matt Huffman. We're going to call him a crook. We're going to say he's Larry Householder when he's running over from the Senate to the House and eventually going to make a run for the speaker there. He's going to be just following in the footsteps of Householder. They cannot trash this man strongly enough. This is what they do, of course. They can see the handwriting on the wall. They know where the direction of the General Assembly is headed. And so they've decided to run a bunch of smear articles against Matt Huffman regarding dark money. To his credit, he is taking this stuff head on and is not allowing them to sit here and blast him and make all of these phony allegations against him without responding. And he joins us now on AM 1420, The Answer, to do just that. Senate President Matt Huffman, good to have you on the program. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. I was doing a lot better until I heard that description. I didn't know they were doing all of that. I did read one article, but
well, you know, it's multiple articles now. Yeah, I know it does, and it's multiple articles, and boy, just the number of people that they're quoting here, trying to paint you as being for sale, if you will. As long as the dark money flows to the right places, you will quote get blank done, and it does. They're trying to tie you to Householder, and I'm watching this, and I'm thinking to myself, there is nothing that a solid conservative Republican in the state of Ohio can do that won't be punished. No matter how much good you do, they're going to try to punish you for it. So tell me what your first response was when you saw this allegation by way of the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
Well, my first thought actually was that this was the suggestion was old news. I actually got asked about this by a reporter about 3.5 years ago. They did, and I forget what the name of the C4 that they're talking about is. Is that I have any involvement with it because it had to do with the Republican Senate primary, and of course I didn't and don't. And the other part to this is these C4s are kind of their own world of political consultants who, you know, they call donors and they get people and they say, hey, you know, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and sometimes they invoke people's names. Sometimes it's a hot button issue, and you know the people putting it together make a lot of money, and so they sort of get other people to do it. But you know, the two things that were in the one article that I did read about it, those were comments I guess made 5 or 6 years ago by people giving someone their opinion. But and I so the other thing I guess I would say generally about C4s is that they're largely not very effective. I encourage people, of course, to give money directly to candidates and mm-hmm. campaign committees who have to do all of the reporting. But that's a separate issue. So you kind of put some quotes in and you add an extra word here and there, and then the next article builds on the words that were in the last one. And even the reporter who wrote the article, when he asked me a question yesterday, he added in adjectives and adverbs that aren't part of the quote. And so, I guess I'll say this. I know I'm kind of going on here. I'm not sure what the folks who are running the plane dealer think they're getting out of a story. I mean, I understand that they want to badmouth a guy they don't like, but what does it advance for them? What does it advance for the people who are doing this? Because it's a nowhere story. But again, as I said, come to the territory.
Well, yeah, and we're talking to Senate President Matt Huffman. You know, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, for all intents and purposes, has become a larger version of the Ohio Capital Journal. It is a left-wing, progressive news outlet. They ran an article, Senate President Huffman, maybe you saw it. They ran an opinion piece by their editor, Chris Quinn, about 3 weeks ago, in which they basically said, we are dropping all pretense of objective news reporting as it pertains to the presidential election. Donald Trump is different than anybody else we've ever covered. We will never give him fair coverage. We will always view everything he says as a lie. And I'm paraphrasing, but I'm not overstating. They have literally said, we don't care. And then he ran a follow-up piece saying, I've received more than 2,700 thank yous from people saying this is what every news agency should do. So their left-wing agenda is laid bare now. And so they are the Ohio Capital Journal. The idiot who's writing this stuff, Jake Zuckerman knows this. That's where he's from. And President Huffman, they throw the word First Energy in there. They throw the word dark money in there and put your name to it. And automatically, because Larry Householder is in prison for 20 years because of money taken from First Energy. So they're trying to make you guilty by association, as you say, by throwing in extraneous words and, adjectives and adverbs in there to make it look like you are somehow complicit in something. So that's what this agenda is all about, and that's why I'm so aggressively calling it out. I want people to know what they're doing, because what they get out of it is to smear a good, strong Republican's name in the hopes of trying to flip the script when it comes to the massive majority that you guys continue to hold in that General Assembly.
Yeah, well, I think observers maybe who don't particularly care about any of these issues have to say to themselves, who's listening? And maybe a better question is, who's being influenced by this? Because the 2,700 people who sent in a thank you, they're simply reading things that they like to read every day. And the folks who know me and know generally what happened with the Householder thing, and some people who even know specifically things that happened, know that... I think I had only actually met Larry Householder once in passing, was otherwise, obviously uninvolved in all of that. So as readership in newspapers gets smaller and smaller, they're speaking to a smaller audience. And, like a lot of publications, it's like, well, we got to make sure that the people who are reading continue reading, and that smaller left-wing progressive audience wants to hear these kinds of stories. Now, I think for newspapers that are objective or media that objective have a higher viewership because there are people who want to hear both sides of it and be informed. I mean, the Wall Street Journal, for example, they're no best friends of Donald Trump, but they're also no best friends of Joe Biden. And so, that's one of the news media outlets. I think that it's too bad because newspapers like the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the other great newspapers around the United States should be the voice of most of the community where they're calling out Democrats and Republicans. And they're as I said to a reporter once, I said, well, a lot of people don't like reporters for the same reason they don't like lawyers, because they ask the difficult questions. And so, I'm a lawyer. That's where I get that from, I guess. But reporters should be asking everybody difficult questions, not just the people you don't like.
Yeah, and it's a good example, by the way, with the Wall Street Journal, because you're right. They certainly are no friend of Trump, but they do indeed hold Biden accountable as well. It is what makes them a reputable publication. But like I said, the Plain Dealer in particular, the largest newspaper in the state, I think they're still bigger than the Dispatch and the Inquirer. I'm not positive, but they're one of the largest in the state, and they do have an obligation here. And like I said, they are targeting you using your name. And by the way, can you clarify this? Quote-unquote dark money. While it may not be favorable, it is may not be, you know, the best sounding thing. It's not illegal. If First Energy made donations to a C4 called Liberty Ohio and did so to support you, you can't control that, and they didn't break any laws, right?
Well, of course that's true, and that is that's happening right now. I used the example yesterday in our gaggle. I'm pretty certain that sometime in the last several months, and probably happening even today, somebody somewhere is sending an email saying, hey, this is Sherrod Brown's C4, and I want you to put money into it. Well, Sherrod Brown doesn't know anything about that. He's not signing off on it. They're not calling him first. These are just people who want Sherrod Brown to get elected. And so all of the major candidates, certainly for national, and essentially U.S. Senate races are national races anymore, ever since the 17th Amendment. But they really don't work very well for state house races. Again, people make money off of them, so they get promoted by consultants and folks working behind the scenes. But they may work, by the way, if you got $60 million in it, like Larry Householder did. But it works temporarily. We saw what happened with all of that.
Yeah, well, you're right. We did, and it's unfortunate again that I think they're starting a smear campaign against you because they know the kind of influence you can have if and when you get over to the House and if and when you make a run for Speaker. This may be conspiratorial. I don't see it that way. It's more just kind of trying to read the tea leaves when I ask this, Senate President Matt Huffman, but I feel as though what Speaker Stevens has done in giving a lot of power to a very small minority in the General Assembly, and particularly in the House, by way of what he did and the deal that he struck with Democrats to get the speakership, I feel like he's favorable to left-wing press. And I feel like they know that you're coming over there, and you would not be so. He's a guy who is, you know, I think he's holding up the passage of Jerry Serino's SB 83 to remove DEI from college campuses throughout the state. He's holding it up, even though it passed overwhelmingly on your side, because this is a payback to the Democrats. And I think that there are left-wing press that know this, and they'd rather have this guy in the seat than you, and that's why they're starting a very early campaign to tarnish your reputation. Any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I think it's... It doesn't have to be a conspiracy. Conspiracy is when, you know, people behind the scenes talk to each other and they don't want anybody else to know what's going on. The answer is that, you know, everybody has preferences and they try to get things done to favor how they do that. And, you know, certainly political parties do that, individuals do that and all of that. The difference with the media is supposed to be people who are getting the truth out for everybody and asking the hard question and reporting on both sides. And you may have a lean this way or you may have a lean that way, but, you know, getting facts and truth out are why the First Amendment is so important. I would expect left-wing publications to not treat me as well as people who are left wing, but I said this before. It's very difficult to lead a chamber and lead a caucus and to pass legislation of any significance when you were elected in the way that Jason Stevens was elected. It's been this tenuous hold, and there's a number of things that, you know, we would like to get, for example, House Bill 215 passed in the House, and that prohibits foreign money in Ohio's initiatives that are on the ballot. And that would seem to me to be supported by probably 70 or 80% of the people. I mean, there's always somebody who boots against something, right? You can never get 100%. But why do we want a guy in Switzerland pilot foreign money into an Ohio initiative, or people from China, or, you know, pick whatever country you want it to be? But we've passed that out of the Senate. It's sitting in the House. Republicans should be for that. Now, maybe Democrats aren't, because they're trying to get their redistricting amendment passed this week or this fall. But certainly Republicans should support that, because this redistricting amendment is really just about electing more Democrats, and actually far left Democrats. The African-American legislator, a lot of those districts are going to be eliminated with this fall redistricting amendment. This just happened in Michigan. There was a lawsuit. Federal court said you violated the Civil Rights Act. Several African-American legislators brought that. So, but, you know, Senate Bill 215 sitting there in the House is something that the public, I believe, would largely support. All Republicans could support it, and probably some Democrats do too. But that's sitting there. Now, you know, we got a Republican governor. I don't always agree with him, and vice versa, but we can get a lot of stuff done. We've got, you know, majorities, significant majorities in both houses. We should be able to get these things done. Senate Bill 83 is a great example. We need to get the marijuana thing worked out. That's kind of just laying there. I'm not sure who's speaking on behalf of the House at the moment. So, yeah, a lot of stuff like that. So it's frustrating as I sit here, especially compared to the last General Assembly. You know, we got a lot of legislation passed with Bob Kupp as the Speaker. No reason we can't do it right now.
We are talking with Ohio Senate President Matt Huffman this morning on AM 1420, The Answer. And, yeah, that's a lot of work that needs to be done, a lot of legislation, a lot of pending things, too. Since you brought up just a few of them, your thoughts on the SAFE Act and the lawsuit? Attorney General Yost, obviously, is defending the state against the ACLU's charge. And one judge in Franklin County there, Holbrook, has, for the entire state, stopped the SAFE Act, putting, again, in my opinion, girls and young athletes in very dangerous and compromising situations. Your thoughts on how that is going to play out?
Well, I think the way it's going to play out is this judge is going to hold, you know, keep a temporary restraining order in place in a similar manner to the judge who put the TRO on for the heartbeat bill and let that sit there for a year. And that's not what temporary means typically. You know, and it's a way essentially for one person, and obviously the people filed the lawsuit, to defeat a constitutionally enacted piece of legislation. And that's not what a republic is about. That's not what a democracy is about. I think we've got a serious problem with restraining orders coming on from a common police court judge who's elected in one county only. So I think that needs to be addressed more holistically about, you know, what can be done about, that. And so something we're going to have to take up in the future. I'd like to take it up right now, but again, it's like a lot of things. It's frustrating because we can't get initiatives like that, through the House. We've got, I mentioned also, we've got a ban ESG type considerations in our public pensions to keep our, you know, these big outfits from, you know, thinking about anything other than the return to pensioners in the state of Ohio. That's what their job is. And yet some of these like BlackRock, you know, they're, at least Larry Flint, their head guy, has talked about how important that is. Well, that's for the pensioner to decide what to do with their money, not somebody in a large office building in New York. So, and I know I got off topic there a little bit, but that's just another one that is sitting there in the House. Everybody should be for that. Certainly the people who are getting checks who are retired or future checks at retirement should say to the House, pass that bill. We're not interested in what they think about these ESG initiatives and corporations, et cetera. So just a lot of work like that to get done, and you know, dealing with this judiciary that says, here's a TRO, I'm going to let it sit there, and, you know, constitutionally enacted bill, can't be enforced.
Yeah, and President Uthman, I don't mind guests going off topic as long as they're going off topic into other things that I want to hear about. So that was just fine. That is very important information. So that's all good, too. Last thing, in the last 2 days, I've spoken to the Attorney General and to the Secretary of State about the Biden ballot thing. And, of course, both of them said it's going to get resolved. It's just a matter of how. My thing is, and tell me if you don't have to agree with this, but give me a response to it, is let it get resolved on their backs. Let the burden be on the Democrats. They are the ones who screwed it up. They're the ones who didn't check the time to make sure that certification was going to be within 90 days of, or outside of 90 days of the election. It's Ohio law. We didn't make it up. We're not trying to keep Biden off the ballot. They just screwed up. And the way I feel about it, if the Republican Party had scheduled a convention too late to get our candidate on the ballot, particularly if it's Trump, no Democrat is going to lift a finger to make it easier for us to fix our mistake. So will the legislature make it easy for them to get this thing done?
Yeah, and I agree with your last part. I don't think the Democratic Party, you see what's going on right now in New York and a lot of other places, it's all designed to stop Donald Trump from getting elected president. And I would also say, by the way, that, you know, Frank LaBrosse, this was brought to his attention by his staff. Now, he could have sat on this until August, but instead he did his duty as a constitutionally elected Secretary of State and said, hey, by the way, Democrats, you've got this problem, which they didn't know about. The locals here, and when he told them about that, they're kind of looking over their shoulder. Now, if we had waited until August for this to happen, there would have been a lawsuit. And, you know, again, my opinion, most folks' opinion is the Supreme Court would have put him on the ballot anyway. And I think it's also clear that, or I shouldn't say clear, it's been suggested to me that it's probably better for Bernie Marino's efforts and Sherrod Brown's efforts that Joe Biden is on the ballot. Now, that's where I guess higher political minds for me to consider, but I think that's what a lot of folks who have suggested it. In the end, it's all going to get resolved. I would like for it to get resolved in a way that if Democrats need this done, that would also benefit the Republican Party. You know, for people who are clamoring for compromise, we should do that. How about if we put that in Senate Bill 215 over in the House and send it over, and we'll vote to concur, and we'll get the no foreign money in Ohio ballot initiative. They get Joe Biden on the ballot. That's the compromise that everyone seems to want to demand, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen.
Yeah, that would be nice to get a little bit of something for that to help this thing get resolved. And you're exactly right, by the way. They are doing everything they can to stop Donald Trump from being the declared Republican nominee, and yet they want to help us fix their own, self-created problems. Senate President Matt Huffman, I appreciate you coming on again in the face of all of this nonsense as they continue to target you. The media is doing everything they can to try to upend Republican power in this state, and that means taking down some of the most important people in it, including yourself. So thank you for answering it responsibly and professionally. We appreciate your time and hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir. That's Matt Huffman. It's 9:57 now. We've got a timeout here. And on the other side, we're going to come back. We're going to shift gears entirely as we talk to Dr. Stephen Levine. Stay here on Always Right.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
Always Right Radio, indeed. 7 minutes after 10 o'clock, and hour number two has commenced. Thank you so much for being with us. It is a Thursday, the 25th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. If you are normally getting ready for the conversation on the culture wars with Dr. Everett Piper, Dr. Piper has the day off. He's actually in our state. Normally we talk to Dr. Piper from Oklahoma every Thursday at this time. It's our benchmark, but he's in Cincinnati giving a speech this morning, so he's got the day off, and so we're going to go into a different direction, and we're going to talk about something different, although we talk about this topic with Dr. Piper an awful lot as well. There's an event coming up on Tuesday that might be of interest to you if you are a parent or maybe even a grandparent, and you are concerned about what your kids are being taught in school with respect to gender and sex identity, particularly the ongoing social contagion and the pushing of children toward that lifestyle with a lot of very different and dangerous psychological techniques. Young kids with their preformative minds are very vulnerable. So this event is happening on Tuesday in Beechwood at the Cuyahoga County Public Library there. The event is described as an event for parents, educators, and community members who are curious and concerned about schools introducing topics of gender and sexuality to children. Join us for a discussion and a Q&A with Dr. Levine in the auditorium at the Beechwood Public Library. The event is free, but donations are encouraged. You must RSVP for the event as space is limited. And you can do that. We'll give you the specifics on how you can register for that if you would like. Who is this Dr. Levine of which they speak? Dr. Stephen Levine is a clinical professor of psychiatry at Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine. He's an expert in gender dysphoria and in gender identity. He's a distinguished life fellow of the American Psychiatric Association and a professor with many years of experience in the fields of gender and sexuality. He is also a thorn in the side of the LGBTQ communities that continue to try to push little children into these deviant alternative lifestyles. We'll talk about that, too. Dr. Levine, thank you for the time this morning. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. So let's start with the event on Tuesday, and then we'll get into a little bit more of the specifics on the subject matter. Tell us what the goal of the event that is happening in Beechwood on Tuesday is, Doctor.
Well, I think last year there was somebody who spoke about this to the same group, and she was particularly affirmative and had certain concepts that offended many of the people in the audience. And so this year they were looking for somebody who had a different view, and I hope a more balanced view about this phenomenon. We generally think that there's such diversity in any psychological phenomenon that one size doesn't fit all, one approach doesn't fit every situation. And so I've been involved with transgender human beings for a little over 50 years. And during those five decades, much has changed in this whole phenomenon, including the vocabulary and including the prevalence or the incidence of new, younger people. 50 years ago, when transgender stuff became clinically apparent, it was mostly with adults and mostly with biologic males. Today, it's actually what we call the demography, the patterns of people who are trans-identified have shifted dramatically. Number one, the numbers of people, young people, have increased enormously. And number two, most of these people, about 70% of them now, are biologic females who, in response to early puberty, are declaring themselves to be boys. So what we learned, what we saw 40, 50 years ago, is dramatically different than what we see today. And so in your introduction, I think you mentioned social contagion. Mm-hmm. And so we have been wondering, all of us are parents and professionals, have been wondering what are the forces that are shaping this new social phenomenon. It's a little shocking, but some data indicate that up to one in five kids who are freshmen in college are identifying with sexual minority status. Most of them are gay or lesbian, but a large percentage of them are also trans-identified. Sometimes they call themselves non-binary, meaning that they're neither simply male or female, but some combination of both. So the phenomenon is changing, and we're all scratching our heads about, number one, what is causing this, and number two, what we should do about it. If anything. And well, in the past, what was done about this was to give cross-sex hormones and eventually surgery. But now that the children are presenting with this at a much younger age, there's more, far more caution about providing medical and surgical intervention for an identity in an adolescent. We recognize that among adolescents, there are certain characteristics. They feel intensely about things. They're very changeable. They're given to rigid, brief identifications with movements. So we are trying to help them be a healthy adolescent and help them not limit their future life possibilities. So we're all in this together, trying to understand what is happening and how to prevent tragedy.
Tragedy can be found in a number of different ways, obviously, as it pertains to this subject matter. We are talking, if you just tuned in, with Dr. Stephen Levine. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at Case Western Reserve, and he's an expert on gender dysphoria and gender identity. You mentioned you've been at this for some 50 years. Most people just found out about this phenomenon in the last 5 years, maybe the last 10, maybe a little bit longer than that, depending on who you are and how dialed in you have been. Because, you know, even the word transgender, you mentioned the vocabulary, used to be called transsexual, if I'm not mistaken. When you started this work studying this phenomenon, it was much, much less pervasive, as you pointed out, 50 years ago. How was it referred to then? Was it referred to as what I think I and others continue to call it? Was it referred to as a psychological disorder?
Yes. It certainly was. This thing got started, throughout history, there have been reports of human beings who die and they discover that the sex that the culture thought they were was not correct. But this got started in the late 40s. There was a book, 1966, by a man named Harry Benjamin, called The Transsexual Phenomenon. At that time in 1966, he reported on, something like 150 people he had seen during the course of his life as an endocrinologist. But it was a rare phenomenon, and it continued to be a rare phenomenon until around the mid-90s, 1990s. And particularly once the century turned into this current century, we've had an increasing numbers of people. And you're right, we called those things transsexual. Mm-hmm. People thought that you could change sex, but it became realized that you can't change your sex. No one can change their sex. You can change your gender presentation. And this is one of the things that causes so much alarm and controversy, because teenagers think, you know, when a girl declares that she's a trans boy, she believes she is a boy, and she gets enraged when people tell her she's a girl who's pretending to be a boy or something like that, where she's not a boy. But she actually believes that she's a boy and the body is different than her gender, but gender is more important than her body. And this is kind of an intellectual challenge for parents and others who deal with them.
Levine, let me ask you a question about this, if I may, about gender, because, you know, we continue to use that word. And, you know, the pro-trans community, if you will, over the course of these last several years have continued to say sex is not the same as gender. Sex is not the same as gender. We had always, most of us laypersons, have always used them interchangeably. But now that they're trying to draw a distinction between them, isn't it fair to say that sex is what you biologically are, but gender is nothing more than your personality? You, in other words, a female, an anatomical, biological, chromosomal female can be masculine, can have masculine traits. It's their personality. And a male, biological male can have more feminine traits. It does not change their sex to have those traits. Their gender is really essentially just kind of how they carry themselves and what their interests are and what their feelings are. It's more of a personality thing, is it not?
Well, yes, sex is of the body, and it's of every cell in the body. It's immutable, it's unchangeable. And gender is this personal sense of the self. That's an evolving phenomenon for all people, not just trans people. My masculinity or my femininity and my understanding of myself in terms of maleness or femaleness always evolves. It evolves throughout the life cycle. So trans human beings, trans-identified people, males or females, are human beings. And all human beings' aspects of identity evolve over time. It's not an immutable, unchangeable phenomenon.
Help me understand that, Dr. Levian. I apologize. Help me understand that part when you say our identities evolve over time. I've been a male my entire life. I'll be a male until the moment I die, as you pointed out. But identification is evolving. Are you suggesting that is it normal? Pardon the use of that word. I know it's not a clinical term, but is it normal for a person like me to, as I age over time, start to change my identification into a different gender?
No. But your understanding of, say, if you're a biologic male and you have felt an identification with maleness and you have your own variety of masculinity and your understanding of male roles and what males are supposed to be and how you are in relationship to that cultural idea is evolving. So your concepts of how to be a man at 17 is going to be very different than your concepts of how to be a man at 47.
Got it. That makes a lot more sense. That made it a lot more clear. And going back to the personality part of this, Dr. Levian, you brought up non-binary, and two questions. Did that exist when you started studying this as carefully as you did 50 years ago?
It seems to be
a new trend. Okay, go ahead and take that one first, then I'll follow up.
Yeah, so non-binary makes reference to binary, and our concept of transsexual in the 60s, the 70s, 80s, and the 90s were that if one were a male and wanted to be a woman, wanted to live as a woman, we called that they belonged from one team or another. They were either the male team or the female team. They were binary, either or. Binary means either or, you know, like one versus zero. It's either one or one or zero. That's binary. But modern kids have evolved the concept of gender, so some of them say they don't have a gender. Some of them say they're both. Some of them say it's fluid, it's changing, because in reference to what we just talked about, the evolution of identity. So today I think I'm this, and tomorrow I think I'm that. Many trans kids at 14 have a preferred name. By 14 and a half, they have a different name. By 15, they have a third name. So you can see there's an evolution as people mature and become more aware of themselves and more aware of the culture. There's an evolution. So many of these kids are wisely calling themselves non-binary. They're not simply the opposite gender. They are exploring how to be in a way that maximizes their function and their comfort and their mental health. That's what they're at. They're looking to find a way of being me that is much more comfortable than I used to be when I was living according to my biologic sex.
Yeah, and that's that I think is at the core of this entire thing, this contagion that we're talking about, this massive growth in the trans community, if you will. We're talking to Dr. Stephen Levian, clinical professor of psychiatry at Case Western Reserve University, because when we hear about what we now know, or now we now call gender dysphoria, it impacts such a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the population as we have ever understood it, where somebody really, really has a mental condition where their mental makeup does not comport with their physiological and chromosomal and biological body, in the same way that a person in their mental makeup can actually split into two personalities. Not in the same way, don't get me wrong, and I don't mean to lecture a professor of your esteem in this field. This is just as a layman describing this. When we hear about the actual gender dysphoria, it afflicts very, very few people, where they feel like they are one sex but their body tells them they're another. But because of the existence and the new creation that you just described of non-binary, does that not undermine the entire concept that they're saying of trapped in the wrong body? It's, no, I want to be flexible. I want to switch from one to the other and back again. One of 75 different genders that are listed on the spectrum now that they have come up with. Again, doesn't that just undermine the efforts that they want or that they have been making for so many years to convince us that people can just be born in the wrong body when they are creating so many different new avenues to travel down, I feel like, for attention and for popularity?
Well, born in the wrong body as a phrase used to be very popular. Actually, I don't hear that as much any longer. I think the field of transgender, the community of transgender people have become much more sophisticated about understanding their quest. And I don't think that phrase, born in the wrong body, has the power and the utility for explaining the self to the self as it used to be used 25 years ago. I don't think anyone's born in the wrong body, actually, and they're born in a body. And that body will remain as long as that person is alive in that sex. What they're now communicating is that my concept of how to be a man, if I'm a male, if I have a male body, my concept, I'm repudiating my how I understand males to be. I sense my nature to be different than the classic stereotypic concepts of how to be a male. Now, you know, intellectually, we know that there's no one way to be a male. There's no, if we took 100 men, put them together and investigated them, we would see that their maleness had, you know, all kinds of, maybe 100 varieties of how to be a man. But when you're 12 years old and 13 years old and you see certain aspects in the culture of how to be a man, and you don't identify with that, it causes you turmoil. I can just tell you on a personal and very benign way, when I went to college, everyone in my freshman year of college, after studying, it seemed to be that everyone wanted to go to the bar and have a beer. And so, like other boys, I went to the bar and had a beer, but I didn't like beer. And because I didn't like beer, I could never even finish one draft beer. And I worried for 6-7 months about, what's wrong with me? What kind of guy am I? What kind of boy am I? Am I unmasculine because I didn't like beer? You see, now that was my personal experience. I finally grew that idea, and I accepted whatever my pattern I had as a person. So, you see, I think we're all struggling with how to be a man, how to be a woman. And we recognize, although young people do not recognize as much as older people do, that there are innumerable ways of expressing your maleness or your femaleness. And it doesn't require you to repudiate your body per se, but to be the kind of person you are temperamentally and follow your interests and integrate your interests with your body without doing mayhem to your body, without cutting off your breasts, without taking testosterone, without taking estrogen and so forth. In other words, we have to grow up and integrate the masculine and female identifications and interest patterns that all of us have. So you and I, not being transgender, have managed to integrate the male identifications with our female identifications and keeping it within our maleness. And trans people can't do that yet.
That's a great explanation, Dr. Levine, and we're a little short on time here, so I'll have to wrap it with this question. But again, I'm going back toward, you know, personality traits as opposed to actual identification of cross-identification as a male to female. How do we explain, then, the existence of all of these other things, like the furries, those who say, and I'm not just talking about the ones doing performative art where they're wearing costumes to be clowns. I'm talking about the ones who literally say, no, I was born in a human body, but I have the soul and the spirit of a different species, whether it be canine or whether it be aviary or whatever the avian, whatever the case might be. That's what they're doing. So when I hear all of those things, I feel like this is more than just, again, my male and female, what is masculinity versus what is femininity and how does that define me? I feel like this is all just, like I said, people saying, I'm going to be different for the sake of being different. They don't suffer from any psychological delusions. They suffer from the social pressures of becoming something that will get them more attention.
Well, I think all of us want to be unique, and yet we all want to fit into the cultural norms. This whole idea of furries is a fascinating thing, but it has to do with what you're talking about, identity, or what you like to separate identity from personality, but they are, identity is obviously one aspect of personality. The other aspect of personality I think you're referring to are human traits, human interests, fascinations. So if one is fascinated by a bear, and one comes to love the concept of the freedom and the aggressiveness of being a bear, one can say, well, I want freedom, and I want, and I'm a vegetarian, and I'm aggressive, and so I currently call myself a furry. But you see, these are adolescent things that adolescents try on different ways of being. They're like costumes that are tried on. They're worn for 2 months or 2 years, and they're discarded for a new costume. That's a characteristic of adolescence. They're trying on ways of being a person, and they're seeing which ones are successful, that is, keep them calm, and which ones make them more anxious.
Yeah, you just hit the nail on the head as far as what I was trying to say. It is. It's costume. They're wearing costumes, and they're trying to say that means they are actually not what they biologically are. Dr. Levine, I'm out of time, unfortunately. I wish we had more time together because I could go on and on and on and listen and get so much more insight for this. But I will tell people they can learn from you on Tuesday night on the 30th. The Parents for Accountability in Cleveland Independent Schools is hosting this conversation with Dr. Levine on gender and sex identity in schools at the Beechwood Public Library. You do have to RSVP, and it looks like the website for that is PFACLE, PFA for Parents for Accountability, CLE for Cleveland, PFACLE.com. Go to the event page there and find the event with Dr. Stephen Levine if you would like to be there and learn on Tuesday. Doctor, thank you for the time. I wish we had more, but I appreciate your efforts here very much, and have a great day, sir.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. It's 10:30. We'll take a time out here.
The Answer.
Okay, 10:38. Good morning. Thanks for being with us. Thanks again to Dr. Stephen Levine. Thanks to Ohio Senate President Matt Huffman. Covered a lot of ground with him in the first hour of the broadcast. If you missed either one of those interviews, catch them at whkradio.com about an hour after the show ends. Coming up in about half an hour from now, we're going to talk to John Schneider. You know who John Schneider is, don't you? I'm looking forward to that conversation a lot because I had a really, really great conversation with him just a couple of days ago. I interviewed John Schneider, sometimes better known as Bo Duke from the Dukes of Hazzard, but he should be known for his extraordinary music career as well as anything he's done in acting and in movies and so forth. But, you know, people just know him. They know him better for, you know, for the Dukes than they do anything else.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born.
Doesn't it make you sad when you hear this? Doesn't it make you just feel old as hell? It does me.
Someday the mountain might get him, but the law never will.
Seth, how old were you when the Dukes of Hazzard's were on? Dukes of Hazzard was on.
Well, I mean, I have to say it. I watched reruns while I was in college and skipped class a lot so I could watch Dukes of Hazzard.
All right.
But I was a little boy. Yeah.
What's that?
What year did they come out?
79.
I was three.
79 is when they started. They were on 79 to 1985.
Yeah, so I was a young child, that one.
Yeah, so you're just a young sausage.
Yes. Yeah, but big fan of Daisy Dukes. Regardless,
Dukes of Hazzard was just it was a classic, and it lasted. I mean, you talk about test of time. It is still watched and streaming by so many people because it was just a different kind of TV back then. It was fun. It was you know, kind of cavalier. It was it kind of mixed action and comedy. You know, you had the goofiness of Boss Hogg and Roscoe P. Coltrane, and along with the, you know, the good looking young guys and you know, their action and their fights and so forth. And then, of course, like you said, Catherine Bach literally gave birth to an entire new style of clothing called the Daisy Dukes, where half of your butt is covered and half of your butt isn't. it was a great thing. And he has had such an incredible career since then. That's why I'm looking forward. He's coming to concert to do a concert in Lorraine at the Lorraine Palace Civic Center, Lorraine Palace Theater, I guess I mean to say, right? Yeah. Coming up next month, I think on May 25th. We're going to have tickets to give away during that conversation with John Schneider coming up at 11:10. So you're going to want to be a part of that. We'll give away some tickets to that. Maybe you'll see me there because I plan on going. Sausage Boy, you going? You going to?
I am. I am going with my wife, yes.
All right, good. Yeah, so maybe we can have a nice little party there. If you don't know, by the way, Sausage Boy is our producer / board operator. And I got to tell you, it's a phenomenal. Why don't we remind everybody of exactly how and why we came to Sausage Boy as the new name for our producer? Seth, we had a little conversation about this on the air, did we not?
We did. Do you want me to play it?
Yeah, play it for me. Remind everybody what happened. Seth, did you just say what I think you just said? What did you just say about the number one pizza topping in America and in the world? What did you say?
I said that pepperoni is terrible.
What are you, a communist?
No, you're a communist if you like.
What's the matter with you?
Pepperoni is the most overrated pizza topping of all time.
It is without question. I mean, it's numbers 1 through 10 on the top 10 pizza toppings. Number 11 is, I don't know, sausage or mushrooms or something. It's like it has the top 10 spaces. That's how popular it is. You realize that, right?
No, pepperoni is an overrated topping. It's crusty. It doesn't taste all that great. No,
it doesn't have to be crusty. Some of them can be crusty. It depends on what kind you get. If you get, like, you know, the what do they call those, old world pepperoni? That curl up like into a little kind of a cup kind of a thing. Awesome. Those get crusty. Then there's the other kind that are, I don't even know what the differences are, but what's the matter with you?
Sausage and mushrooms are the only way to go.
Look, you can eat sausage in a variety of formats,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
There's only one place in the world to eat pepperoni, and that's on a pizza. You know, I mean, seriously, we're going to have you investigated.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't investigate him, but we had a very, very lengthy group chat about this very, very important topic about pepperoni versus sausage on a pizza. And it was a group chat a couple of nights ago amongst the entire staff. Josh Booth was on it. Johnny Hiles was on it. Mary Ann was on it. Marcy was on it. Seth was on it. And I was on it. And we were all kind of kicking around, this conversation. And needless to say, it was pretty much universal. It was everybody against Seth. Everybody agrees that pepperoni is the number one topping on a pizza, and that Seth is pretty commie, maybe even borderline, you know, liberal. And I know he hates that phrasing.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
He did brag. You, Seth, what'd you find? What'd you find? You did a little search to find places where sausage is popular on a pizza. And where'd you find?
Illinois, sausage is the number one pizza topping.
Illinois, yes. Blue State, Chicago, Blue City, sausage lovers like you. I don't understand how you can get upset if I call you a liberal.
Wow. One, my wife likes sausage.
Married another liberal. Good for you guys.
I find quite a few sausage lovers out there.
So this conversation that happened on Twitter, or I'm sorry, on Twitter, bigger, on texting, I should say, two nights ago, carried over into yesterday at the radio station after the show. We were talking to my friend Mark King from Keeping Medicare Simple was in the studio. We were chatting a little bit about Medicare. Thanks to Mark. Make sure you go to KeepingMedicareSimple.com for all Medicare questions you might have, by the way. So we were talking a little bit about this, and Mary Ann, came in and started it up again.
Yeah.
By the way, you do know who the pot stirrer was on the text message, don't you, Seth?
You?
No. No. I think we need to go back just a little bit here, and let's take a look here. The original post two nights ago was from the person that everybody tells me, oh my God, your call screener is so sweet.
Yeah,
she's so nice. She is such a nice person. Right. I always love talking to her, and she's just so nice. And so the sweetheart of the crew, Marianne, is the one who started this text chain the other night with this message, quote, "Hey, Bob, you know, we never did have that team dinner we tried planning. What do you think about meeting at a pizza joint?" She named one. "We could order a few large pepperoni pizzas for our group." And that's how it launched. I didn't pick up on it right away. I was just going with the, yeah, we should have a dinner. We should have a, you know, a night out together. It'll be a lot of fun. And then she texted me separately, Seth, "You don't know this." And since it's all out in the open now, it's okay. I don't feel like I'm disclosing. There's no, there was no NDA, no non-disclosure agreement that was made here with Marianne. But she texted me privately and said, "Where'd it go? I'm sorry. Hold on. This is from Tuesday, right?
Now you're just making stuff up.
Yeah. No, here it is. Tuesday, 7:25 p.m. I'm taking a cheap shot at Seth. Work with me."
Wow.
And I said, wow. And I laughed, and she followed up with, "Thought I'd stir the pot for a change." She literally not only wanted to stir the pot, she wanted credit for stirring the pot. So Marianne started the whole thing that lasted probably 45 minutes of memes and GIFs and insulting Seth for his propensity for loving sausage. So yesterday, after Mark and I got done doing some recording, here comes Marianne again with her big stick with which to stir the pot a little bit more. She's riding Seth more about his sausage love, and eventually she says, "And then we've got Sausage Boy over here." And and it hit me like the light bulb just came on over the top of my head like in a cartoon, or lightning struck or something like that. And I said, "Oh my gosh, that's it. You are now Sausage Boy. From now on, in perpetuity, or until a better nickname comes along, Seth is now Sausage Boy on this radio program."
Yeah, this is awful. This is absolutely terrible, to be honest with you.
It's also accurate.
It is not accurate.
Yeah, how is it not accurate?
Well, because I like sausage. That makes me Sausage Boy?
Yes, it does. And because you don't just like it. You are attacking the number one pizza topping that there is in the world, and that is supported by all of us. And you are like extraordinarily defensive of your fondness for sausage.
I truly believe that if you did an online poll, that sausage would be the king of all pizza toppings.
Now, hence why you are Sausage Boy. Only Sausage Boy would say something like that.
And because I love sausage doesn't mean that I'm Sausage Boy. I mean, you can at least call me Sausage Man.
No, Sausage Boy. And Marianne, kudos to Marianne for the...
Can you dig it? Yes.
Sweethearted, kind-hearted, lovable Marianne is the one behind the scenes just twisting the knife bit more.
She is none of the above, and I think most accurate and listeners of this program understand that she is a vile person when it comes right down to it.
Seth, I think I can say this with some confidence and with some authority when it comes to you and your choices of pizza.
You just got to try harder not to suck.
That would be my advice for you, Sausage Boy.
I am looking forward to our sausage party that we are going to have.
No, that will definitely not happen. If there is a sausage party, you and anybody else who wants to engage in said party are going to have to find another table, maybe even another restaurant, or go outside and have a sausage party in your truck or something.
I will change your opinion on sausage by the time that night is over.
We'll see.
You will
be
a sausage lover as well.
No, that is absolutely not happening. I've tried it enough times to know that, and get that stuff off of my pizza and just give me my pepperoni back.
Do what you want.
Usually double pepperoni.
Double sausage.
Pepperoni explosion is a good thing to have at some pizza restaurant.
I want as much sausage as possible.
That's why you're Sausage Boy.
Okay.
Quote, "I want as much sausage as possible." Who would say that other than a Sausage Boy? Nobody else would say that. Bill Swirsky wouldn't say that. Bill Swirsky of Superfans, the Bears, as he's choking on yet another sausage, wouldn't say, "I want as much sausage as I can possibly get." Only Sausage Boy would say that. Or either that or maybe Abe Froman. Maybe Abe Froman. Do you have Abe Froman?
I do.
You're Abe Froman.
That's right.
I'm Abe Froman, the sausage king of Chicago.
Yeah, that's me.
The Sausage King of what city was that again?
Chicago.
Yeah. And what kind of city is Chicago?
Well, there are bad parts of Chicago.
It's a big blue city.
Recordings just got back.
It's one of the bluest cities in the country. It's right up there with New York and San Francisco and L.A. and Philadelphia, Seth. It is as blue as it gets. So if you want to be the Sausage King of Chicago, go right ahead. But A, you're going to be called a liberal, and B, you're going to always be Sausage Boy.
I am the Sausage King of Independence.
You are Sausage Boy from now until we decide on a better nickname. So there you go. And Marianne, thank you. Because that is going to bring much fun and much joy to this show from for now and into the near future.
We do not thank Marianne for anything.
Oh, we absolutely.
She Marianne'd this one again.
No, this one she actually did the opposite of Marianne-ing it. She got one right. She nailed it. It was perfect. And I'm serious. I mean, I'm thinking about going to the boss and see if we can get her a raise. She deserves a raise for this. So we're going to work on it. Okay, it's 10:51. Thank you to Marcy. Thank you to Marianne. I'm going to love thanking the crew at the end of every show. Now I'm going to thank Johnny Hiles. I'm going to thank Josh. And I'm going to thank Sausage Boy right here on AM 1420. The answer will be
645,000.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France. On AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, hour number three has commenced at 8 minutes past 11 o'clock on this Thursday, the 25th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. I want you to hear something.
Tides are turning. We can't feel it in our bones. But now's not the time to hang it up and hunker down at home. Constitution. It isn't just a word. It's a glue that holds the whole damn thing together. Together. Together we can make our country proud. Together we'll all stand out from the crowd. There's freedom in our speech. Get on your feet and speak it loud. Proud. Together we'll all stand out from the crowd. There's freedom in your speech. Get on your feet and sing it loud. That's why we won't give up. Hell no. In this lost world, she's our hero. Freedom isn't free. It's up to you and me. Brother, I believe when it's time to toss the sea, she's worth it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I gotta tell you, I only plan to play about 30 seconds of this. But I kind of just can't turn it off. Oh my God! Listen, I just played it for you. You got the audio version, but I was playing it off of YouTube, so I got the video version. And I'm going to tell you something: goosebumps. Not kidding. Just telling you right now. In all seriousness, it's inspiring what I just played for you. And when you watch the passion of the man singing it, and you can see it, you can feel it. It's quite extraordinary. That is one of the latest by John Schneider. John Schneider, I interviewed him a couple of days ago for our TV show for Strictly Speaking, which should air in about a week or two. Anyway, I interviewed John, and I started out by playing Waylon Jennings, because Waylon Jennings is the one who sang the extraordinary timeless classic Dukes of Hazzard theme song, just a good old boy. And I said, this time I'm starting with John Schneider's music himself. John Schneider, who was so beloved as Bo Duke, who has been a tremendous success in TV and in movies through the years. He, of course, played Jonathan Kent on Smallville as well. Just a remarkable career as an actor, but it's his career as a musician right now that I am just so blown away by. And we are so proud to have John Schneider back with us here, or on with us now, I should say, on AM 1420, The Answer. Hey, John, good to talk to you again, brother. How are you?
Hey, good to talk to you, too. Thanks. Thanks for all that you said about that song. I so appreciate it.
Oh, my God.
It was inspired, you know. It was inspired by the kind of self-inflicted mess we're in right now.
Yeah.
And I wanted to call attention to those young folk who are being deliberately uneducated or de-educated, which is certainly evidenced in what was going on, or what still may be going on, at USC. I mean, my God, this is just terrible. I when I wrote that song, I thought that we had gotten as bad as we were going to get. Little did I know, we'd continue this intentional, and I don't mean we're doing it, but they are doing it. They're doing this intentional spiral of our freedom, of our country, of our integrity, of our global position. It just blows my mind. So
yeah,
there's more music coming, Bob. More just like that. Going to be back in the studio in 2 weeks here in Nashville, and going to put out an album for the 4th of July called John Schneider's Made in America.
Man, I loved it when you told me that the other day, and I love it even more now. And you know, to your point about John, you know, about how bad things have gotten, you wrote this song, or you released this song anyway, a couple of months ago, according to what it says here on YouTube. It's gotten so much worse in the 2 months since you wrote it or released it. It's gotten worse in the 2 days since you and I talked.
It gets worse.
Yeah.
It gets worse every minute. You know, and it's... the really scary thing about it is that it is, it's all, you know, we talked about, you know, well, you know, we have to protect ourselves against the enemy, foreign and domestic. And people just kind of threw domestic in. I mean, not our founding fathers. They knew. But I think for the last 100 years or so, no one ever considered that we would actually have a domestic enemy. And who was it that said, the quote is going to be right, but I can't remember who said it. You know, we have met the enemy, and he is us. You know, I never in a million years dreamed that would be true here in the United States of America. That people would not only take their freedoms for granted, but somehow think that throwing them away with both hands, or systematically attacking a measurable demographic because of their faith. I never thought we would get here. And we've gotten further into it. Like you said, we've gotten further into where we are right now in the last 2 days.
Yeah, we have.
I watched the news yesterday. Which I seldom do, but I happened to catch what I thought was, you know, an uprising in the Middle East somewhere, and it's in Southern California. I mean, we've got to I hope everybody who's listening understands that this is no longer your neighbor's problem. It's no longer the person down the street or across the room's problem. This is our problem, and we must fix it in November, or this country won't exist in a year and a half. You know, we're past the tipping point. We are now into synergistic math. 2 and 2 equals 5. 5 and 5 equals 20. 20 and 20 equals 100. We are into that in a downward spiral, the likes of which no one ever possibly could have imagined.
No, you're not exaggerating when you say a year and a half, this country won't exist. At least the country that we know, the republic that we have been gifted. And going back to what you said, John Schneider is our guest. John Schneider was so famous for so many years as Bo Duke and as a number of other memorable characters. He's an independent filmmaker. He has put out 20 albums. He has 5 number one Billboard country music chart hits. His latest that we just played for you is called She's Worth It. John, what you just said a moment ago about domestic, foreign and domestic enemies, and never did we think we would have them here. Do you know who the domestic enemy is in the eyes of this current government? It's you. It's John Schneider. You're a white, you're a straight white, you know, male singing patriotic songs on the radio. I'm a capitalist. Straight white male talking to you, capitalist, or that into. We're the enemy, according to the, you know, we're the extremist enemies of the republic, according to the people who are running the show right now.
Well, to the democracy, they never use the word republic because they know if they start using that, someone might actually look it up.
You're right.
A democracy is contained within a republic. It's not the other way around. But like I told you last time, we've lost track, and they've intentionally done this to us. We've lost track that this truly is a government by the people and for the people. It's not the other way around. So we've got to stop acting like it's the other way around. We've got to stop being the tail and start being the dog, because they truly do. These are public officials. These are public servants. They will not start acting like public servants unless we start demanding that they do. You know, they're going to get as much as they can. They're going to mess with us as much as they can. And people are too busy working extra hours just trying to buy the same amount of gas and eggs and the bacon that they were able to buy a couple of years ago. People are having to take another job to make ends meet because of this, again, intentional crippling of our country.
It is.
You know, this is not a, they're not doing a bad job. They're just like the border. They're not doing a poor job. They're doing a great job at the job they want to do, and they are crippling this country. My what I would have thought 2 years ago was a conspiracy gene I must have, but I don't think I'm a conspiracy theorist. You know, they called Noah a conspiracy theorist, and then it started raining. So I think it's an intentional crippling. So at one point we're going to throw our hands up like we did with the mask mandates and all of that. I was shocked that we actually did that. But we're going to throw up our hands and say, you know, there's no law and order. That was intentional. The defunding of the police was intentional to put us, I believe, in peril so that one Wednesday we would say, we give up. We need martial law. Please, 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 federal government, come in and run everything. And, you know, run and ruin are only one letter apart. So I think, I hope I'm wrong, but I think that's the end game. But mom and dad and brother and sister, once you invite vampire in, you will never, never get rid of them.
You know, what you just said is so,
let it happen.
What you just said, John Schneider, is so important when you talked about the fact that, they're not doing a bad job. They're doing a great job, but people just didn't know what their intention was and what job they're trying to do. It's one thing to say, you know, we're all voting, or excuse me, we're all rowing the boat in the same direction. We're all trying to make this country great, trying to make it better for people, trying to lower costs, lower taxes, blah, you know, and they're just not good at it. They're bad at it. They just really are making a lot of mistakes. They're not making mistakes. Everything they're doing is purposeful. Everything they're doing is intentional. The job that they want to do, they are outstanding at, and that is crippling this country, right?
Yep, that is what they're doing with every bill, with every plan, every single day. They are doing that, and it's not an accident. People who think, people think that Mayorkas and Biden and the powers that be are doing a bad job with our border. They're delusional. They are not doing a bad job. This is exactly what they want to do. They are doing a great job at it, but we cannot allow their plan to work. It can't be successful, and that's up to us. That's up to us in November. That's up to us in our when we open our mouths in our PTA meeting. That's up to us when we read our local newspaper or talk to a local politician. It is time now we hold these people accountable to the job that they signed up for.
Yeah, that is.
They're not going to do it on their own. You know, that's another mistake. People think, well, you know, they're going to see the light of day. Because everybody loves this country. No, they do not love this country. They are the antithesis of Kennedy's ask not what we can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. These people are only concerned about what the country can do for them. It's for sale. It has been sold. It has been bought and paid for. We have to take it back. Why? Because it's ours. It's not theirs.
Too many good men died to make it ours. Too many good men have protected it over 250 years. You know, that gift that we were given, this gift of freedom, and to just sacrifice it and surrender it so haphazardly as it seems like so many are willing to do, it's incomprehensible. You take your voice very seriously, John. It sounds like not just through your music, but the two times you and I have spoken right now. How important it is for people with a platform, people with a voice, to give this side of the story. Mostly, you know, the people with the platform of celebrity are on the other side, and they're the ones who are complicit in taking this whole thing apart. I just think it's so big for somebody like you and others to step up and say what needs to be said and not worry about cancellation.
Well, yeah, you can't worry about cancellation if you work for yourself. I'm never going to fire me. I like me. I agree with the views and opinions of John Schneider, but we all have a platform. You don't have to be a celebrity to have a platform. You have somebody's ear, Mom. You have somebody's ear, Dad. Next time you have the opportunity to have a conversation, say what's on your mind. Invite public debate, or what used to be intellectually called social intercourse. Invite that into your next conversation. And you'll be surprised at how many people agree with you. You know, these folks are what Rush Limbaugh used to call them, the not-so-silent minority. Mm-hmm. While we are the ever so silent majority, we've got to stop. As long as we keep that up, young people on the fence, who, it's a whole other conversation, but I think they've been critically, intentionally uneducated by the older generation. You know, and I mean older than me, so I mean the octogenarians. I think this is the first time in my life where the older generation is intentionally dumbing down the younger generation. You know, it used to just be that the younger generation, you know, I was that for a while. We just didn't get it until we had to pay bills, and then all of a sudden we had a, you know, I could have had a V8 revelation.
yeah, right.
But, you know, this, all the different programs they put, all the white supremacy nonsense and all the stuff that they've been saying to our students obviously is paid off when you look at this basically call for genocide against the Jews at our institutions of higher learning.
Yeah, well, calling for genocide against the country, too. I mean, you mentioned Southern California. Yeah. It's going on in Northern California, too, at Berkeley. It's going on all up and down the East Coast. And sadly, it's happening in schools across the Midwest, too. These lunatics who are screaming death to America, many of them are guests of America. They are here on student visas, and they're screaming for death to America and death to Israel, death to the country that took them in and is giving them opportunities. I don't know how we allow those people to stay.
No, I don't either, and I don't know how the powers that be at these institutions can look at what's happening in their quad and not come down and say, okay, you out. You're out of here.
Well, you know why they don't, though. You know why they don't.
Will not be refunded.
Those students are doing what those, you know, administrators at those institutions taught them to do. Most of these kids aren't going into these schools radicalized. They become radicalized by the schools themselves. So they're not gonna kick them out. They're defending them.
But they're losing. It's just like these. It's like Bud Light, and Target, and Ben and Jerry. It's like all these people who are trying to placate. You know, everybody wants to kiss the right butt, and I don't understand why these companies with these big boards, who understand supposedly marketing, can allow this to continue, because it obviously cripples Planet Fitness. I mean, look at what happened to Planet Fitness.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so if that's not an indication, I always talk to mom and dad, if that's not an indication, mom and dad, of the power you actually have, they don't want you to know you have. Use it. You have it. You have that power. And we must use it for the rest of our lives, because it'll slip away. But we've got to get this back in November. If we don't get this back in November, then we are going to look like the streets of the Middle East.
Yeah.
We already do. But that's going to be the norm. That's not going to be the exception to the rule. And that's
John,
up to you.
Hey John, I want to tell people to come and see you, because I'm going to be there. It's coming up in May, on May 25th. That's a Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Lorraine Palace Theater.
Can't wait.
We're so excited for it. I'm so excited for it. I want to ask you a quick question about it. Are you just singing, or do you incorporate any of the messaging we're talking about right now into the show? And I ask that with a good reason. Did you see recently the video of John Mellencamp doing a show in Toledo, and he got all political and all lefty political, and somebody in the crowd shouted, "Just sing something," and he proceeded to throw a hissy fit and cursed at him and challenged him, and then walked off the stage. I don't know if you saw that. So I'm curious as to how a guy like you, with strong opinions, do you bring that to the concerts with you, or are you just doing music when you're there?
If somebody asks me a question, I'll answer it. So I don't normally bring it up. I got kicked out of Branson.
What?
which is hard to do, because I was thinking that Branson was the America you remembered.
Yeah, I would have thought that.
It was election week, and I did this little fun thing with Johnny Lee, and we were talking, and it was election week, so it got to the election, and I said a couple things, and it was hysterical. People were laughing. And some clown in the back said, "Shut up and sing a song. You know, we don't want to come here to listen to politics." But it was funny. You know, I think that politics can be very, very funny.
Yeah.
And like I said, people were laughing. I have a very biting, very sarcastic sense of humor, and also a very biting and very sarcastic sense of what is right and wrong. But I almost always preface my opinion by saying, "In my opinion." You know, I think this, you know, and I will fight for your right to disagree. I just will. You know, I believe in the First Amendment. I believe in freedom. But this guy said that, and it was just during my little saying hello to Johnny Lee. So it was like a 5-minute segment before my show. And I said, "Sir, if you didn't like what I just said, you were going to hate my show. Why don't you save yourself the trouble and leave now?" I'll leave. So I got in trouble for that, but that's okay. You know, it's okay to get in trouble.
I love that you had the guts to do that, though, man. I do.
I didn't have the common sense not to. I'd like to get credit for having guts, I live like in a Peanuts cartoon. All of a sudden, I'll say something and it'll pop up in a bubble in front of my face with, you know, childish handwriting, and I'm, oh no, did I just say that?
John Schneider, I love it, man. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you again, a lot shorter this time around, and I know you're a busy guy, so thanks for making time for both these things. I'm going to give away tickets right now, and I'm going to tell me what you think of this. I was going to give a pair of tickets away to two different people. And I was going to use the number 7 and 6. Would that work for you in light of 1776? We'll give them away to caller 7 and caller 6. Does that work for you?
That works perfectly for me. Go ahead, do that. Make sure they let me know that they're the ones that won. Okay?
You got it. And I will see you on May 25th in Lorain, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on, John Schneider.
You take care. Stay free, my friend.
God bless you, brother. Thank you. There you go. Hey, he stole my line. That's how I end every show with Stay Free. And John Schneider just stole my stuff. You know what? That's copyright infringement. Callers 6 and 7 or 7 and 6. Seriously. Pair of tickets to go see John Schneider and Cody McCarver Saturday, May 25th, 7 p.m. at the Lorain Palace Theater. I'm going to be there. Sausage Boy's going to be there. Might have some other people from the station there as well. If you want to be there for free, callers 7 and 6 in honor of 1776. And we'll...
The Answer.
All right, 11:38, a little bit late coming back because we were a little bit late getting out with John Schneider. I'm telling you, I'm so looking to this concert. I don't listen to a ton of country music, truthfully. I'm a classic rock guy. I'm an 80s new wave guy mostly. Didn't really like much of the 90s for music. I probably like even less of the 2000s. I don't know. But a little bit of country, old time country. Sausage Boy, are you a country music fan? Sausage
Boy, a little bit, yeah,
a little bit. Okay, yeah, I'm like I said, also a little bit. There's some things I really like, some things I'm like, whatever. But I get really, really fired up when I hear John Schneider's music because I didn't really listen to much of it, and really, I didn't know he had 20 albums.
And that song is amazing, though.
I didn't know he had 5 number one hits on the country Billboard charts. That blows me away. I mean, that's an incredible thing. This is a great show we're going to go to. So we're giving away a couple of pairs of tickets. Did we get the second winner yet? I know who the first one was.
Yes, we did.
You got a name?
Jim from West Park.
Jim from West Park. Are you kidding me?
Not kidding you.
Jim from West Park got through. And the other guy that got through is a regular also. Some people know him as Charlie. Some people know him as the politically incorrect mechanic. The other people know him by his Mexican drug cartel name, which would be El Cheapo. El Cheapo got through and stole a pair of free tickets away from a more deserving and more needy person. So El Cheapo, I know instead of being a Mexican drug cartel lord, he's more of an Italian mafioso, a godfather. But either way, if he was on the Mexican side, he would be El Cheapo. No, seriously, just playing with Charlie. Congratulations to Charlie and Jim. They got those free tickets there. I'm looking forward to this show. I really am. And I'm going to close out this radio show right now by letting you hear the rest of that song. I played about, I don't know, 45, 50, 60 seconds of it or whatever. It fired me up a lot. It does. And I'm telling you, if you watch this, download it. Help John Schneider out, by the way. Buy his song. Download his song on your Apple Music or Amazon Music or whatever it is you have, Spotify. Download his song. It's called She's Worth It. He calls it his love letter to America. And you can see why. And if you watch the video of it, which I'm going to do again as I play this on the close of the show, if you watch this video, you will just see pure, unadulterated love of country and passion and enthusiasm and inspiration for it. It's so good. You've got to watch it. I'm going to post it for the hell of it. I'll post it on my webpage. I'll post it on my Facebook page at Always Right Radio, and I'll post it on my Twitter page as well, which is France Rance. And you just enjoy this on the way out. And let me say it now. Be well, be safe, stay free. See you tomorrow.
They're about to.
It'd be so easy to turn our backs and walk away. Ignore the fires burning, live to fight another day. But I'm believing that no matter what it takes, her amber waves of grain should grow forever. It's a duty, it's a right, an obligation to stand for her and fight, for she's our nation. That's why we won't give up, hell no. In this lost world, she's our hero. Freedom isn't free, it's up to you and me. Brother, I believe she's worth it. We can't feel it in our bones, but now's not the time to hang it up and hunker down at home. Constitution, it isn't just a word, it's a glue that holds the whole damn thing together. Together, together we can make our country proud. Together we'll all stand out from the crowd. There's freedom in our speech. Get on your feet and speak it loud.